Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, or whenever you happen to be listening to this, welcome to the Film Realist Podcast, the film and TV podcast from a complete nobody. That is hopefully for somebody. My name is Kyle Naranya, and welcome to episode 194, where on this week's episode of the podcast, I'm going to be reviewing Project Hail Mary, starring Ryan Gosling, directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller, with a script by Drew Goddard. If you missed last week's episode, I explained that I think this is the perfect Venn diagram for Kyle Naranya. As this is a feature film review, there will be a non-spoiler section as well as a spoiler section. So if you've been dodging everything about this and you didn't have a chance to see it, there's no need to worry. The first section of the review is for you. And then once you've seen the film, you can check out the spoiler section. And then to end the show, I will be responding to listener mail and question of the week responses. Let's go into space for a really long time with my Project Hail Mary review.
That is a great question.
You know what? Try this.
Why is a school teacher in space? Question.
No.
Don't like that voice.
Can't unhear it, really.
Scary.
Let's try this.
Ooh.
Nope.
Why is
No need to even continue. Good, nope.
Before getting into the non-spoiler thoughts, it is relevant to state I have not read the book. I was purely looking at this film as a film-going experience. There was no notes based on anything they may have cut, changed, removed. None of that is relevant to my thoughts on the film. The first place I want to start is I am completely embarrassed because I knew this movie existed, having not seen anything from it until very recently. It somehow missed my most anticipated movies of the year. And that is relevant because I like to think of myself as the authority of the amateurs. And that was a big mistake by me, and I'm really sorry to everybody who was excited for this, because I absolutely adored this movie. There is something to be said about what Phil Lord and Chris Miller, while working with an incredible screenwriter like Drew Goddard, are able to do and weave in what is such an intimate story in this insane extraterrestrial space with a science fiction concept that is so believable because Andy Weir does take the science in his books incredibly seriously. It all has to be, whether it's theoretical or completely practical, things that human beings are capable of proving. And it could be taken as, wow, this is a real slog. The way that the use of science is adapted into the exposition to help explain what's going on, specifically with the character of Ryland Grace, played by Ryan Gosling, who makes that jargon and massive exposition dumps incredibly easy to understand. I would equate that to what they were able to do in The Big Short, explaining the real estate market crash and all of what happened in the early 2000s in ways in which you are able to understand them. Now, this does not, spoilers, I guess, have Margot Robbie drinking champagne in a bubbly bathtub. Instead, you have, ironically, her co-star from Barbie, Ryan Gosling, break a lot of this down. And what makes his character so effective in doing that is, as opposed to just being a school teacher, which he is, his expertise is what allows him to be an incredible school teacher in the way that he's able to connect. You would have heard in the clip leading into this that he is a school teacher who does go out into space. And while I won't say how he winds up in space because that is a spoiler, his interactions with Rocky, and I know this based on how book fans reacted to the very first trailer for this showing an alien, are set back from that because it was such a major twist of the book. You can't do that with the film. It would probably wind up feeling so much in the marketing material if you only had to have Ryan Gosling on the spaceship by himself, feeling too much like it was derivative of the other Andy Weir novel, The Martian. And what's incredibly funny to me about that is I really did like The Martian, ironically also adapted by Drew Goddard from the Andy Weir novel. But there's something so much more inherently human and makes the emotional impact of this story so much more effective because you have an actual character for the human to bounce off. There's a level of isolation you feel with being this person on this insane mission, the Project Hail Mary, in order to save Earth, that when you have the Martian, and this is not a criticism, it is a comparison, and this separates the films from each other. The Martian has a level of communication back to Earth. That's the whole point. They're going to save him. Where the journey of this is quite literally that message of life, where the destination in this does matter, but the journey that Ryland Grace goes on and the gambit of emotions he feels because of this journey, why he's on it, what the actual mission is, and the connections he makes with Rocky need to sell this movie, because most of it is Ryan Gosling with the incredible work of the puppeteers, the voice by James Ortiz, are this movie. It is big and bold. It is spectacular to look at while also being so quiet and so personal. And you get that from what I believe to be maybe Ryan Gosling. You know what? I'm not going to maybe it. I'm going to be definitive in my opinion. I think this is the best performance Ryan Gosling has ever given. And that is because it is not, and this is not to say he's been one-dimensional in his other work, but he has specifically been given tasks for each of the movies that he's done leading up to this. I absolutely adored Barbie. You can go back and listen to my review for it. But Ken had a specific job in that movie. Quite literally, he was Ken to Barbie, and there was a exploration of masculinity that he goes on throughout that film. But Ryland Grace allows Gosling to show every tool in his metaphorical acting toolbox. He will make you cry. He will make you laugh. He will make you feel concerned for himself. And what's incredibly funny about this character, him being a school teacher, being somebody who is in the ground level of education, while obviously having a spectacular mind for the science, is not the person who should be doing this. It's very clippable in the very first trailer where he goes, "I am not an astronaut." And he's not an astronaut. So there is an everyman quality to him being the last man on Earth who maybe should be doing this. He has a mind within the science, but he's not a pilot. He's not an engineer. And I loved this movie so much for that relatability in being in circumstances that you're not necessarily built for, but seeing the end goal that is greater than the man and his role in what it means for humanity, having that put aside. And the archetype of the movie, its foundation or its structure, is really interesting in the way that we explore who Ryland Grace is. Without getting into spoilers, it's a clear three-act separation in a way that's maybe more obvious than a lot of people would suspect, specifically given the fact that this is a novel about one specific thing. But the way in which we learn about Ryland, we explore the mission that he is on, the what is Project Hail Mary, why is he on that mission, seeing the actual mission itself and the aftermath of what it means for that mission and the way that it's structured and how you spend time with him, getting to know who he is, getting to dive into the relationship that he develops with Rocky and the significance of what they are both doing in space, trying to do what they are doing. This movie is so good. The grandeur of it, it is so visually gorgeous in a way that is designed for theaters. It has been a conversation, pandemic onwards, of a lot of people not going to the cinema because they feel that it has to be justified to them. So many movie-going people are now comfortable watching films at home on their TVs. And that is not a criticism of that audience, but in order to see great, incredible pieces of art, you need to support that medium regardless, in regard to what you are interested in, as opposed to just seeing the big blockbusters. And I'm recording this Sunday afternoon. Project Hail Mary had the second biggest opening for a non-IP film ever, just behind Oppenheimer. And that shows, one, clearly the film was being marketed like crazy, the selling factor of Ryan Gosling, but also the spectacle that people aware they were going to see. And that's what will get people in their seats for this. But that's not why I'm going to tell you to go and see it. The emotional gauntlet that this film delivers with one actor and a puppet for 90% of it is so small in the grandeur of what the movie is. But if it doesn't work, the movie completely falls apart. You have to absolutely love Ryland Grace and Rocky's friendship and their connection. And the development of that friendship is just as interesting as the combination of them working together to solve the great problem of, you know, things are going bad for us on Earth and wherever Rocky to become comes from. You need to laugh when those characters are telling jokes. You need to cry when, you know, things go wrong for those characters. It would be not very interesting if there were no hurdles for them to face. But the way in which this film is delivered, its use of zero gravities, while also having to just be a visual feast of Technicolor and the visuals. I'm going to be using some clips in the shorts that I'm going to be putting out this week. And just the use of color alone to show us space in a way that we've never seen it before. This is not just outside of Earth. This is light years away. What does that look like? And feeling as if the filmmaking capabilities of everybody involved have grown since the days of Gravity. It's not normal that I mention this, but I feel like it is worth mentioning in this, that the cinematography by Greg Fraser, who recently worked on The Batman Part 1, I'm a little disappointed he's not going to be making The Batman Part 2, but The Creator, Dune Part 2, and then Project Hail Mary. There's a phrase that was used years ago in the Screen Junkies era when people watched honest trailers, and I think it is so fitting for a description of this movie, which is the thinking man's blockbuster. It was originally quoted to, or given to, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which is a movie I absolutely love and why I was looking forward to The Batman. But Phil Lord and Chris Miller deliver on what a blockbuster needs to be. And if you remove all the rest of the movie, it's a great blockbuster. You'll have your popcorn fun with it. But what is an incredibly specific solution that they seem to have the answer to, or problem that they seem to have the answer to, unlike a lot of people working in the blockbuster genre, is the personality of the character and their effectiveness in delivering a movie about people you care about, that you can laugh with, that you can cry with, that you empathize with, and going on an exploration of the human condition. There's a lot of blockbusters that fail to meet those expectations. And there are elements of this movie. You could conceivably pick it apart and say, well, this is this movie, this is that movie, and this is that movie. But the way in which they have maneuvered their way through Hollywood, delivering experiences that are succinctly Phil Lord and Chris Miller, and it is incredibly humorous to me that they go through their animation era, they then start making live-action films, only to get back to animation after they left Solo for creative reasons, to then go to the Spider-Verse, get their feet wet again with animation, and then to come on to Project Hail Mary, which I don't think I'm overstating the fact that I did really like The Martian. It was a great Castaway in space. That, I mean, the simplest way to explain that is what it is. But Matt Damon's performance, as well as everything around that, led to it being a phenomenal movie. But the journey that you go on in this film is unlike anything I've seen so far this year. It hit me in ways that I wasn't suspecting, and I saw this with friend of the show, Chris. And what sets this blockbuster apart from so many is we saw this early, and there is a sequence of about 5 to 6 minutes where no one is talking. It is quiet contemplation and quite an emotional moment for Ryland Grace. And the audience was completely silent. There was not a moment during that sequence where somebody was talking to another, somebody was getting a question answered or anybody went on their phone, the entire audience was incredibly invested. And that is a success similar to the experience that I certainly had with a film that Greg Fraser made 2 years ago with Dune Part 2, and incredibly excited for Dune Part 3. But this delivers, Project Hail Mary delivers on every box you would have for a major blockbuster, but also on something that would be in a different category of a personal character drama. I adore this movie. I'm looking forward to taking more people to see it. It's been the movie so far in 2026 that I have recommended more than anything. And there have been some films that I've enjoyed so far this year. But as of right now, this is the best thing I've seen in 2026. And I can't wait to tell you about why in spoilers. So let's go into spoilers. It's been about 15 minutes of just absolute praise. And there's going to be even more in spoilers. So let's get to there next.
He has incredible hearing. He can see through walls. Personal space is at a premium.
Who is Grace talking to? Question.
There's no way you can hear me right now.
Can hear. Who are you talking to?
You can hear this.
Yes, Grace, say you can hear this.
What about this?
Yes.
Oh my god. Look at this. Look how far away he is.
I mentioned in non-spoilers how the three-act structure and its utilization in the movie is incredibly effective. That is because the way that the film is executed and delivered to audiences, each act is a clear and distinct portion of the story. When we meet Ryland Grace, he is coming out of his coma, having been sent into space. We learn it was 11 years ago, given how far he has to travel. And given the fact that he was in this coma for 11 years, he has to remember who he is. And this allows the film to have narrative flashbacks to sort of fill in the gaps as he is looking through files, photos, and sort of putting together what exactly has happened to him and why he's in space. We aren't told immediately, but we learn this much later, that he didn't volunteer, that he was actually made to participate, given his expertise with what is dubbed astrophage, which is part of the Petrova lines, which are actually taking away the heat from the sun. This is the major problem that the galaxy is, or the universe is facing. For whatever reason, there is a microorganism that is leaving Venus, going to stars, and drawing their heat away. Thus, as a result, humanity's sun would get colder, and Earth's crops would die. This would affect, obviously, the amount of food that would be on Earth, resulting in who knows what wars, cataclysmic events based on a change in climate. And what's incredibly fascinating about this movie, and I'm surprised that I haven't heard it yet, I'm glad that this isn't the case, is while this movie does deliver an incredibly compelling space adventure, at its core, it is about human capability when united to fight a greater threat. And what's funny about that to me is we are so used to, since the dawn of the 50s, used to extraterrestrial films, Attack of the Martians, or whatever alien it could be. Something is visiting Earth and immediately wants to have a conflict or conquer humanity, because that's been what humanity has done. And I've seen this from an interview with Neil deGrasse Tyson that I really appreciated, which he talks about the reason that we've always seen that from extraterrestrials arriving on Earth is that is how humanity has reacted when going to an unknown or new place. And the movie's exploration of that concept is it is an organism purely looking to survive, and it is just a repercussion of what they are doing to survive that has resulted in Earth's sun dimming, giving us only about 30 years before humanity would be absolutely doomed. Ryland Grace, being someone who had this theory that hydrogen was not required for life to exist because the universe is a vast and complicated place, this is why he's been brought in, but his theory was considered insane, and it resulted in a physical altercation, which is what led him to being just a teacher. And I say just a teacher, given obviously he has an expertise that is vast throughout the scientific field, but he is obviously doing something much smaller than what everybody else is doing. His recruitment and his expertise of the astrophage, which is slowly revealed to him, similarly to his backstory being slowly revealed to us, is they are going to use this to send out three astronauts to find why this one specific star, 11 years away, 11 light years, isn't dimming. That is the ultimate mission. And if they're able to achieve this, they can find out why and hopefully save Earth's sun, our star. It's kind of important, you know, all the planets revolve around it. Pluto used to be one of those. Thanks, Neil deGrasse Tyson. And that's all in the first act, outside of the reveal, of course, that Ryan Gosling didn't do this by choice. And that sets in with what is the consequences of the mission that, up until the reveal is given, of this mission. You are going out there to die, but three humans volunteered to save all of humanity. This is not, I'm doing this for glory. Although this would come, but you'd be dead. This is a union of human possibility. It's what what's so funny is the space race happened because of geopolitical conflicts and wanting to be there first. But at the end of the day, ultimately, we did get to the moon. And here we are having done that. And now the world is what it is. But to have a movie that demonstrates human possibilities when working as a united species, it's a phenomenally positive and optimistic approach. And it is why, similarly, Star Trek was so beloved when it happened and was for a very, very long time. But unfortunately, the internet was created and it's made it a much harder place to enjoy that level of optimism. And that's all the first act. The second act, and it leans into the second act. It's not a completely even third, is the real meat of the movie, which is Grace meeting Rocky. And my God, I was telling someone today that it makes me laugh that there are distinct characters in films that have to work so much more than other characters. You can have humans not necessarily work in movies, maybe not give all consistently the best performances, but there have been moments in cinema like Empire Strikes Back, and this is another great example. You could throw the Muppets in there too, where if the non-living characters being brought to life through puppetry don't work, the movies fall apart. And in an era now where there is essentially some sort of politics in the way we explain how visual effects are used, it's gotten quite frustrating when people tell things have to be purely practical, but in essence they're not, or they're lying about what's been done practically or what's been enhanced with visual effects. And Phil Lord and Chris Miller have an understanding of what the visual medium is capable of and how to best service the story. At the end of the day, if the story doesn't work, the visuals don't matter. If you don't care about the people, they don't matter. And if you don't love Rocky and Grace's relationship, this movie doesn't work. And everyone involved, whether that be the puppeteers, the visual effects artists enhancing the performance of the puppet, James Ortiz, but the back and forth between Ryan Gosling, I almost fused his name together to be Ryan Graceling, but Ryan Gosling and Rocky, or Ryland Grace, and Rocky are perfect. The repartee between those two characters has all the different phases of a relationship, but given the cataclysmic nature of the goal that they have in mind, it amplifies that to an insane level, which is you have first contact and the challenging maneuverability of trying to communicate. That in itself is so funny. And that's why I love this movie, is these are some really incredible problems that you have to be able to overcome in order to succeed on the end of the mission at the end of the day. But all of these moments feel so personal and so small given the two characters. It obviously matters that they do these things, but the movie doesn't go, yeah, this is really important, this is really important. Each individual intimate moment is played true to the heart, real, not tongue-in-cheek, trying to be funny. It is humorous given the circumstances, but it is not playing that just to be getting jokes. The movie's humor is so heartwarming because it feels genuine out of what is happening as opposed to just zingers back and forth. Rylan Grace is a funny guy. He is an entertaining personality, but he's not a comedian. There's that level of, I have an expertise in a certain field, and some of that can be funny, but the situational comedy comes out organically, which I really appreciated. And Rocky and Grace's back and forths are so funny, specifically looking at the way that they quite literally see the world, where Rocky's visual capabilities are through echolocation. And obviously we know how humans work. And you will hear that in a clip leading into the spoiler review, in the way that that relationship develops. They go from having to be able to communicate, to becoming roommates, to becoming the dearest of friends, trying to solve this problem in an understanding of how to figure out how to make the astrophage not eat the cells of Earth. We have to figure out why this is happening. And the solution to that is just as cinematic as the actual just mission through space. But each of the problems have grand solutions, but the way in which it's delivered to us as an audience doesn't make you feel stupid, because they make it very easy to understand, with that being visual aids and having it through a conversation as opposed to somebody just sitting down and going, here's how things are happening. But you are enthralled in this relationship and captivated by the performances of the two people or the two characters back and forth. And I loved those characters. And I mentioned in non-spoilers that there's a sequence near the end of the second act where Rocky sacrifices himself to save Grace. They have successfully collected the astrophage, or what they believe is to be a predator cell circling the other planet that they can use at Tau Ceti. They believe that there is some sort of other bacteria that is a predator to the prey of the astrophage, and that they can use that to save their sons from dying. And after this absolutely insane mission they go on to collect it, it's very much in line with something you would see in maybe a movie on the ocean. I mean, that's why ships are called ships. But they collect it. Grace is knocked unconscious, and it needs to be seriously in requiring of medical attention. And Rocky, who cannot live in the same atmosphere as a human being, risks his life to get Rylan Grace, to the medical chamber of the spaceship, going into an atmosphere that is not healthy for him, and is gravely injured. And there is a sequence of about 5 to 6 minutes where we just see Rylan waiting and hoping that his friend is okay. There's a moment very early on when we learn that Rocky watched his entire crew die, and that through sleeping, they watch each other because they're always looking out for each other from other predators. And it seems like it's used comedically in the moment, but to see where the relationship has developed, where Rocky is back in his habitat within the ship, and Ryan Gosling is just there trying to look after his friend, his best friend, and wanting to make sure he's okay, that he'll look after him. And everyone in the theater was dead quiet, completely enthralled and invested in this rock puppet and Canadian Ryan Gosling hoping everybody was going to be okay. And that is a testament to the quality of this movie. Everyone working on this might deliver the best thing they've worked on. And I know that sounds hyperbolic, but I believe that to be the case right now. This movie made me incredibly emotional. It made me laugh so many times, and it was so entertaining, but also so brilliantly optimistic and enthusiastic about humanity. And that is something you don't always get. And it's been an unfortunate circumstance of the blockbuster. I go back to 2023 when we had The Flash, Transformers Rise of the Beasts, and Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. And one of those movies I really liked, and The other two were fine, and one was, regardless of that. And it was clear from that point on, we're almost 3 years out from then, that just generic blockbusters weren't going to do anymore. The audience has higher expectations. And Phil Lord and everyone down understood that with this movie. This is an Amazon MGM Studios film. This could have been dumped on Prime Video, and I would have watched it, and I would have absolutely loved it. But getting to have that experience in a theater with people, with an audience, everyone together to have this experience with this special movie, and that, at the end of the day, is what this movie is. It's special. It has everything you would expect that all the other blockbusters deliver on, but it is all the other things that I've stated today that make this, so far, my favorite movie of 2026. And you're going to have to be absolutely insane to top it. And I know what some of the other movies on the list, on my most anticipated list, are. And some of those, I assume, are going to be spectacular, but they're going to be doing different things. But I absolutely, I've said this a lot, and I know that. I love Project Hail Mary. And if you are one of those people that is wanting to go see something special and unique, you're tired of the IP, and you don't see this, shame on you, because this is absolutely worth whatever the fee is to see it, the ticket price. And I'm going to be totally honest, I'm probably going to wind up seeing it again. That will do it for my Project Hail Mary spoiler review. Now let's get to listener mail and question of the week responses.
Can I ask you a question?
Just one?
There's something I really need to ask you.
I ask the questions, you answer the questions.
Why do you ask questions to which you already know the answers?
Did that count as a question?
Yes.
Damn it.
Last week's question of the week was, what science fiction film would you like to see adapted into a feature film? On Instagram, Keely Jack said Andy Weir's novel Artemis, most underrated of his three books in my opinion, either that or Red Mars, the series of books. Okay. And then Domar Sano just read Bobiverse, so might be recency bias, but I would love to see that as a fun movie. Okay. I've heard of Artemis. I haven't heard of Bobiverse. And then on YouTube, Crutches RDH says After Worlds Collide. These are giving me more books I need to read, but probably won't have time for. Scotty Cameron says, I'm so out of touch with anime world that I assumed Avatar and Legend of Korra were anime. I was so unaware that it's a subject of debate to count on. The more I think of it, Astrobot is probably the answer I want to give. Okay, interesting. And then this week's question of the week, my gut says William Shatner's Captain Peril, but that would just be Star Trek Generations 2.0. So I'd choose the Hero.com series, as it's just a spinoff of Villain.net. If we count graphic novels, I'd go with Robert Kirkman's Oblivion Song series. Graphic novels are novels. I mean, I feel like they need to reach a certain length. But once you get into maybe even a hardcover of trades, you get enough story in there that I think they count, Scotty. Legacy writes, I'm glad the One Piece show exists because I cannot make myself watch the hundreds of episodes of the anime. And for question of the week, I have no thoughts on any other adaptations, I fear, because I do believe we've reached peak with the topic of next week's video. That, of course, being Project Hail Mary. On TikTok, NH Tahir says, Gideon the Ninth, but an animated film only. I love some shout out to animation. Yeti Beardson says, Blindsight by Peter Watts. Bruno G says, Dawn by Octavia E. Butler. Lord of Gifts, Rendezvous with Rama or Rama? I'm going to go with it's probably Rama. Flammable says, Halo Contact Harvest. I'd be curious if after the television series, if we're actually going to be getting more from that universe in live action. Honestly, it might work better in animation, but Paramount doesn't really do that. And then we have Bad Boy 420. The last three books of the Expanse universe need a film adaptation. I want to see Locania on the big screen, the Wrath of the Dark Gods disassembling the ships, Bobby going out in an effing Valkyrie. Love The Expanse, and I love a shout out to that universe. It's absolutely fantastic. And lastly, we have Dylan Pollock of the Movies to Watch Before You Die podcast. I haven't read many science fiction books, so I guess I'll say one from when I was a kid. The White Fox Chronicles always painted a cool dystopian future that would be relevant now with the fascist government taking over and a young boy leading the resistance. Dylan, I feel like that is a fairly common concept, but its use of dystopia could be really compelling. I think there's been a revitalization of dystopia because of the relevancy now to the world we live in, unfortunately. So yeah, that would be interesting. My problem is unfortunately, I don't read enough books. And the series I'm working on right now is Book Talk's favorite thing right now, which is Dungeon Crawler Carl. I'm almost done the fourth book, which is The Gate of the Feral Gods. It's said to be turning into a TV show, and I think that makes more sense than a film. So I'm hoping it's animation, honestly. It would be really expensive in live action, but we'll see. I don't know where that's going to be wind up being made. So we'll see. I don't know. But on to next week's question of the week. So next week's going to be fun because it's going to be TV related. But my question for the audience is, what introduced you to the Godzilla world? There is a chance it was the animated series in the 1990s. More correctly, what Godzilla film did you see first? And then what has your investment been in the Godzilla universe? Of course, we've had the MonsterVerse for about 11 years now, 12 years now. So I'm really looking forward to hearing what the audience has to say. To answer the question of the week, you can email the podcast, filmrealistpod@gmail.com. You can comment below directly on YouTube and Spotify, or you can always at filmrealist on any of the social media stuff. Just make sure to include the hashtag QOTW. If you're watching the YouTube version of this podcast, please like, subscribe, and if you're listening to the podcast, leave a 5-star ranking. It helps the podcast get into those other algorithms. I greatly appreciate any of the support that you want to show towards this little show of mine. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Kyle Naranya, and I will see you next time.